Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and we are talking to Drew Larimore and Jay O'Connor Navarro because they're here to talk about The New Peggy. Welcome, guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
And The New Peggy is a brand new musical. Well, actually, maybe not brand new, but it's a new musical which has a new cast recording that has just come out. And Drew and Jay are responsible for this rather off-kilter musical. I can call it off-kilter, I think. And Drew wrote the book and co-wrote the lyrics, and Jay wrote the music and co-wrote the lyrics. You guys, this is one of the more interesting, unique, eclectic scores I've heard all year. The show is a very interesting listen, a very interesting story. But before we jump into The New Peggy, why don't you guys take a moment to tell the listeners a little bit about yourselves? Why don't we start with Drew? Tell the listeners, I guess, where you grew up, how you got into music, what your influences were, and kind of what drew you to musical theater?
Yeah, I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and I've been writing plays ever since I could pick up a pen. In terms of writing, it's the only writing that really made sense to me. I've been writing musicals at an early age, took some time off from them to focus more on straight plays and screenwriting, which I still do. The last 10 years, I have picked back up an interest in musicals that are satirical, oddball, offbeat, meaningful, and straddle that fine line of hilarity and sadness, which I think The New Peggy pens pretty accurately. So always looking for interesting projects. I think The New Peggy is probably the most far out there thing that I've worked on lately. I am drawn to offbeat shows. I think musical theater is an offbeat medium, and those are the shows I want to see. So those are the shows that I want to write. I do not write music. I write a book. Typically, they are original concepts of mine. I do very few adaptations, and I prefer to do co-lyrics when permitted.
And Jay?
Yes, I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan. And my early music, I guess, career was as a classical pianist. I was considered a piano prodigy. So I was doing that very classical world for a long time. Then I went to Vanderbilt for my undergrad, where I tried to not major in music, which lasted about one semester. And then I decided to get a double major there. But I had a bunch of other influences come with me there. I did a musical theater growing up through high school, even through college. But I knew I didn't want to be an actor. But I was always doing a lot of arranging, music directing without knowing what music directing really was. And my director over at Vanderbilt let me know about the program at NYU, the Graduate Musical Theater Writing Program. And that's how I ended up in New York City. And I've been there ever since. So I went straight from undergrad to grad school for musical theater writing and have never left and been working as a music director and also as a composer ever since then.
Mm-hmm. And the New Peggy is the first show you guys have written together, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it's a show we began probably 6 or 7 years ago. It's based off of an 8-page monologue I wrote where this character Peggy is explaining this frantic morning and the unveiling of events that occur. And an actress, Cirilla Bear, who's fantastic, who has since retired, who at the time was looking to play Peggy, thought that Jay and I would be a great collaborative team to musicalize this piece. So we were kind of hooked up, so to speak, by an actress that saw promise in our collaboration.
And so when you sat down for the first time, especially now, since Drew, you actually had written the monologue, and so you knew the character of Peggy and you knew sort of the basic storyline of what this day in the office was like for her. Jay, what did you think when he was presenting this to you? Because this is a little bit out of left field. I mean, since I know the storyline and I've listened to the recording, what did you think the first time Drew presented this to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I remember Gorilla and I had done a show called Adding Machine off Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also
a great show.
Off kilter in every way possible. So that's how I got to know Cirilla. And so coming off of that, I guess it wasn't so weird to me. That's the type of thing I like to do. I like collaborating with playwrights because they don't have any preconceived notions about what a musical can be or should be. Mm-hmm. And that's what I thought was so cool about this monologue, because it was more of a character sketch. Not that it wasn't a play, it was, but in the way that Drew pitched it to me, it was like, here is a character sketch of this, about this woman. What do you think about making it into a musical? So right away, we didn't even try to adapt that monologue into a musical version of that monologue. We just took the character of Peggy and kind of ran with it. So I was totally game. I love weird things. My big influences in music theater are not your typical ones. Like Michael John Lacusa is a huge mentor of mine. So it was exciting to me to collaborate with someone who didn't know what it was going to be already, because that doesn't interest me to just write songs around a script that's already existing. And for same with Drew, not writing book around a bunch of songs that already exist. So really doing it holistically and something different was a really natural pairing for us. And we started right away.
And Drew, I think I heard that this was sort of somewhat based on a real experience you had in terms of it being based on an office you worked in at one point in Los Angeles. I know you I'm not going to ask you where, but based on an office you had worked in at one point, right?
Yes. I mean, I the events in this script have never happened to me, and I've never witnessed anything like this. So, you know, please get me off the hook legally.
Yes.
But in terms of inspiration from this, I didn't realize this actually, that the inspiration from this came from this weird moment in this office until a couple of years later, when Jay and I were doing an interview about this for WNYC. Actually, it was my first job out of college working with a music management company. It was a very old school way of doing things in terms of throwing objects at one another's desks and screaming, and just a wild way that HR would have no part of nowadays. And there was this middle-aged kind of sad secretary who ran everything like the Gestapo, I guess. And she was very proud of her position. And the poor guy that ran the company was very ill and was in bed at home in his mansion in Beverly Hills, and would call in every day for a check-in. And a lot of times he would call in and just scream and yell and call them names and hang up. And it was just one of those environments. And I happened to be sitting next to her during a very, very heated phone call, which he really laid into her. And, you know, what do you say? She hung up the phone, turned to me with tears in her eyes. And unexpectedly, she told me, he's like a father to me. So I just never forgot that moment. And I just thought, what a weird job and a weird situation. So I do think subconsciously Peggy came out of that moment, but I didn't realize that until years later. And I don't even think I told Jay that until years later, because I didn't know.
Right. So give the listeners sort of a synopsis of what the show is about, without giving too much away, but kind of give us a rough synopsis of what the new Peggy is about.
Well, it's about a downtrodden secretary who's middle-aged, that's been at her job for 25 years, working for the same verbally abusive boss, and she's in love with him. Mm-hmm. And it's a very old school office building. I believe it's a paper baking supplies factory or something. And And she lives for him and his requests, whether it be his dry cleaning or his, you know, his takeout. And her best friends are
Eugene and Rita.
Are Eugene basically. And Rita.
Yeah.
That have human names, but yes. Rita is a manila envelope that lives in her desk. And Eugene is a stapler. And they are characters in the show. And they keep her company all day. This is a lonely woman. And they get a surprising phone call from the boss, whose name is Harry, that he has something important to talk to her about. So delusionally, she believes that he's going to confess his love for her, finally, after all of these years. And Rita and Eugene prepare her for this moment. Unexpectedly, he's giving her bad news that he's running away with the Latvian office accountant back to the old country. And, you know, from that point, the play kind of spins out of control or takes a runaway train to murderous results.
Who's the only one you can depend on? What the hell is standing in your way? Where's the heroine we know is inside you? When's the perfect time? Today? Why are you sitting there doing nothing? How can we help you gain control? Grow some balls, bare your teeth, show the world what's really underneath. It's now or never.
You know, I know there's a perfectly reasonable way to deal with all of this. You're right. That clock is ticking awful fast. And maybe if I just put you two away and go off on my own and take a moment and suck on a few hard candies, a solution clear as Dr. Pepper will smack me right tack-a-whack between the eyes, and all of this will no doubt be swept under the rug and just in time for his 11:45 conference call, where Harry will, no doubt,
bid you farewell while he gives you a gift card to the mall as your severance pay?
Mumble a simple thank you, a shake of the hand just hours before he goes overseas with a woman who wants to take him for all he's worth!
Cut the shit, sandworm! How do you think you get things in life? How do people, other people who aren't you, get what they feel is theirs? Who's gonna win here, Peggy or Velna? What's the harm in a little foul play? Where's your passion? Where's your chutzpah? When's your turn at the damn buffet? Why are you sitting there doing nothing? How can we help you gain control? It's time to act! Unsheathe your claws! Take back what's yours! It's for a grander cause! It's now or never!
When newer staplers came around, I had no one to trust. But just a little water from the fountain made them rust.
When fresh manila envelopes enveloped me instead, I snuck into the copy room so bitches could be shred.
Now Velna's taking Harry and you're just a sitting duck. All you do is suck your candy, all you do is sit and suck. Velna's panties are in a bunch somewhere.
So your panties are in a bunch.
And so what are you gonna do, Peg? Just sit back and have your frozen lunch.
What? You mean my rock hard, twice baked, extra cheddar frozen baked potato?
Who's gonna win here, Peggy or Velna? What's the harm in a little foul play?
Where's the heroine we know is inside you? When's the perfect time? Today!
Why am I sitting here doing nothing? How did I let her gain control? Grow some balls! Bare your teeth! Show the world what's really underneath! It's time to act! Unsheathe your claws! Take back what's yours! It's for a grander cause!
It's now or never!
Yes, it's a bit of a wild ride, I would say.
Yeah.
But it's so interestingly constructed because, you know, in some ways, Peggy, it's for me listening to it, it was so hard to figure out what is real and what is not real, what is in Peggy's mind and what is actually happening. And Peggy comes across, and I have to note that Peggy on the recording is played by the amazing Anne Harada, who most people will know from, of course, Avenue Q, and most recently Schmigadoon on television, who's a fantastic performer. And she just embodies, it's amazing to me that this was not written for her, because she's just embodies the perfect, what you think Peggy would be. But just describe the character of Peggy, because she just seems to be like this kind of, I won't describe her as like childlike, because I don't think she's childlike. I just think she's living in sort of this bubble of kind of this innocent bubble of, this is her world. Her world revolves all around the office and all around serving Harry, her boss, and she lives for him. It's almost like she's his office wife, even though she's mm-hmm. not married to him. And she's so dedicated to him and so dedicated to this life that that's all she lives for. And her only really she doesn't have really friends except for Eugene and Rita, who ultimately you have to wonder about Eugene and Rita anyway, because they reminded me, and I'm not sure what this was, if this was your intent, but they sort of reminded me of in the old cartoons when you used to see the cartoon characters who had a cartoon version, angel version on one shoulder and a devil version on the other shoulder, except for the fact that these two are almost like two devil characters on their shoulder, because they're almost never kind of steering her in the right direction sometimes. But talk a little bit about the dynamics of who Peggy is and how the concept of Rita and Eugene came about.
Yeah. You said, I'll let Jay take this one, but you said that she would like to be his office wife, yeah. But I think she would like to be his real-time wife, yeah, as well. And I think that's very clear from the beginning. But Jay, how did we come up with Rita and Eugene? Because it didn't happen right away, did it?
No, but I do remember this conversation, Drew. I don't know if you do, where you literally...
Now you're going to make me sound weird, but I know what you're going to say.
So you're talking about like coffee or something, because coffee is an office theme. And I think you... It was like maybe probably a Monday morning as well. And then I think you got through the day and you said to your coffee machine, you're like, well, we got through the day, like as if we were like, you talked to your machine. And it was kind of when we started writing this, technology was obviously, 10 years or however long we've been doing this. It's quite different already. But the fact that we were kind of beginning to talk to devices like Alexa or Siri, and they were kind of becoming part of our lives. Like I say, Alexa, turn on the lights all the time at like a hotel when I'm not at home. I'm like, oh, you can't do that here. And our relationship to these inanimate objects. And I think that's where the initial idea of those two came in. And exactly right, the angel and devil imagery is what we were going after the whole time with them. And whether or not they're all an extension of Peggy. Mm-hmm. So they're not so externals. That's why they don't really make sense a lot of the times in terms of what they're trying to get her to do, because she's constantly trying to justify each next step. And they are her courage. And in many of those moments, like here's an idea that she's never expressed to anyone or shared to anyone, but she was able to do it with these two friends of hers. So that's where those two came from. Yeah.
And who else would this poor woman talk to other than inanimate objects? I think, in the monologue version, maybe she had a friend that sat next to her and she was retelling this story. But musical wise, it's called The New Peggy, and all of it's five characters, and they're all middle-aged. They're all kind of bleak. They're all working boring desk jobs. They're fading. They're dull. They're wrinkled. Literally, the Manila envelope sings. Rita sings about being wrinkled and losing her shape. And the Eugene, the stapler, claims that no one is coming to him for as many staple jobs, because the copy machine does stapling so much better. You see this even in Harry. You see this even in Velma, the sort of seductress character that is seducing him into a new life, that they're all looking to reinvent themselves, perhaps a little too late. Mm-hmm. So while it's a very playful and ridiculous and hopefully side-splitting, entertaining musical comedy, there is a darker thread that runs through it, of course. Otherwise, I wouldn't be interested in it. That is about people that are in midlife and fading and trying to reinvent themselves, even as inanimate objects.
Right. And I even get, even just listening to it, having not seen, you know, any sort of physical production images from a show of this, you can actually sense that it's in an old office building. The office itself is old, sort of antiquated. It feels like it's not up to speed technology-wise. Things are done in a very old-fashioned way. Modernism is kind of passing it by, including them.
Yeah.
Everybody in the office, everything in the office is outmoded, and everyone is struggling to find a new version of themselves. You know, Rita, I mean, does anybody really need Rita anymore? People use emails now. People send, you know, people send documents digitally. They don't need the manila folders and manila envelopes anymore. And like you said, a rusty old stapler, people don't use staplers that much anymore. They're not printing documents that much anymore.
People don't use secretaries anymore.
And they don't use secretaries anymore. Right? And they don't need, and you know, and poor Velna is, you know, she probably used to be a knockout at one point, and now she's getting old and she's losing her figure.
Fast.
Right. Yeah. And it's, everything is sort of like reaching its expiration date, so to speak, including Peggy.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like this last gasp. And you kind of feel the desperation and the struggle they're all going through, but it sort of has, and I hate to throw this name out there, but it sort of has this strange skewed David Lynch feel to it. You could just see David Lynch directing this as a film or somebody of that style, that it's got this weird skew to it, that it's a view of it that has that humor in it, but also a kind of horror aspect to it, that it's got a real edge to it. So talk about how you deal with the juggling the tone, because you're doing that not only in the script, but you're doing it, at least on the album, with the score, because musically it's really all over the place. You've got a lot of different things you're touching on influence wise with this score. It's got musical theater, there's gospel, it's all over the place. So Jay, talk a little bit about the music. And I don't mean all over the place, meaning it's not cohesive, because it is, because you're really setting a tone for what you want the score to convey to the listener.
Right. Yeah, it does range. I mean, it's because Peggy is the synthesis of the play. We really have to tune into what Peggy's feelings are about, like, this great fantasy life that she has in her mind, like the movie in her mind she's living through each of these moments, which sometimes when it's, you know, her big I want song, it goes to that kind of gospel place of just like really wanting something and reaching for something. And then it goes to a very film noir place when they're kind of talking about murder and intrigue. She has to give herself this level of fantasy to live in. And to me, you know, music is always the subtext of what the text is going on. And in music theater, sometimes those often go together too much. But in a play like Drew is writing, there's, you know, what people are saying and what's actually happening. And then there's what's happening kind of internally. And so I feel that my job as composer is to infuse that and let us know what is actually happening, like psychologically, amidst all of this kind of zany, wacky stuff. So it has to go through a lot of like complex harmonic language. But what I try to do is always have a melody that is, you know, sing backable. I don't alienate the audience in that way, because we can go to, well, this is crazy place and maybe an atonal place, or but I think melody is wildly important to me, and so is the groove, and the groove is very much the heartbeat of a song. And there's always a tinge of sadness to every single song. Even her opening song, she's on this crazy phone call and she's saying all these words, but in the middle section it's just very earnest. There's something naive and earnest about Peggy that even though we think we wouldn't be able to relate to this person who's talking to these characters, she really does live within all of us because we can feel that pain that she has. So that's what I try to do in terms of the score, even if it's going to be something fun and music theater, there's something, that tinge of sadness that can be achieved, I think, through the music. And then even with these simpler orchestrations that we've done for this recording, creating each of the fantasy worlds that she moves through.
Monday. Harry Markowitz's office. Harry, he's not in yet. Do you think that a boss would be here by dawn? Do you think Harry Markowitz is up? Come on, no way. He's probably still snoring. Mine's still in a blur. Yes, sir. What an awfully early morning phone call. I bet you were hoping to bypass me and get right to the head honcho himself. Well, I know this might sound kind of crazy to you, but when you're speaking to me, it's a lot like speaking to Harry. I know, he's his own man with his own central nervous system, but I like to think of myself as an appendage, but kind of like a detachable one stuck together by sew-and-stick Velcro. You know, one that he can take off for some alone time in the bathroom. I'm here. How can I help you? Oh, he's very happy with his current plan. I've been picking it out since the business began. Let me take your name and number down and can. We call you back sometime after 3, Mr. Hankerton, 'cause see, if it wasn't for me, the place would be a dust rag. If it wasn't for me, the air would smell so stale. If it wasn't for me, who does the morning donut run? Nothing would ever, 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 ever get done. If it wasn't for me, Peggy, the dependable Peggy. Gotta be his extra set of eyes. Gotta stick to him like mayo on fries. Gotta catch insurance salesman's lies. Right, guys? I'll check those quotes. Take some notes. I do know under Harry's current plan, a conversion privilege wouldn't take into effect for another 6 years, 7 months, and 4 days. And that despite his initial label as a preferred risk, due to his recent colonoscopy last May under the guidance of Dr. Clarkson, who found it imperative to remove 3 polyps, his premium will more than likely go up in the instance his next yearly physical reports a shortness of breath. So I've already weighed some cons and pros. There are hardly any benefits to what you propose. Even if he keeps on double-fisting General Tso's, he knows I will find the best fee. If it wasn't for me, I really don't have time to chat. If it wasn't for me, who's always on the go? If it wasn't for me, I guess I never thought about that. If it wasn't for me, well, what you wanna know? This is what I have to offer. This is what I meant to do. This is all my time and effort. This is how I make it through. Sure, happy hours, happy for those who get to go. But funds and friends and family, that's a life I don't quite know. Every day the same old story, unfulfilled up to the brim. Every lunch a baked potato, but I do it all for him. If he didn't have me to quietly clean up his spills, if he didn't have me to make sure he gets fed, if he didn't have me to tell him when to take his pills, if he didn't have me, he'd probably be dead. If he didn't have me, who'd make his coffee light and sweet? If he didn't have me to rub his smelly feet? If he didn't have me, his life would be so incomplete. Time's not. If he didn't have me, nothing would ever, 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 ever get done. Morning, noon, and night. Done. Happy Monday to you too. Done. 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 Done.
fantasy worlds like the title song, which is very Broadway jazz handsy. There is, you know, there's the perfect cup, which is the sort of this Russian sort of very sensual number. But but it's
putting Rachmaninoff out there, but like, of course, she wouldn't know like what Latvian music is. So it's like everything's a little skewed. It's like, all right, her version of Latvian is like
mm-hmm. it's East, yeah. anything Eastern European. So it's sort of, you know,
right? Yeah. So, but that's where Peggy. Mm-hmm. So she wouldn't know anything more specific than that.
And you know, it is a comedy. It's a dark comedy, mm-hmm. and I think that like as the play begins, we are wondering who. Who the hell is this woman? This is bizarre. When the inanimate objects appear and start singing with her, that really, I think, takes the play into another direction of fantasy. But I think two numbers in particular, which continue to move me after so many years, are I Coulda, which is Anne sings, and This Morning, which Daniel Marcus sings. And they are anything but fantasy. They're very real. She's seeing in I Coulda that she could have done many other things with her life, but the past 25 years she's done this, and what a sad recollection. And this morning that Daniel sings is the morning he's leaving, the morning he thinks he's taking off, and how could he ever take a morning for granted again. And those were actually two monologues that I wrote that Jay musicalized into sort of songlets. I mean, they're not fully full songs, but the emotional core of them I find very moving. And every reading we've done, every presentation we've done, people have walked away saying, you know, you really didn't have me necessarily in the beginning with her bizarre personality, but you... but they were crying by the end of it because there mm-hmm. is a tragedy and a relatability to years gone by and to her delusion.
I just wanted to know. I mean, on a Monday, but especially on a Monday, I could have done it. I could have started that cat sitting service I always wanted, or I could have moved to San Antonio and taken up ballroom dancing. I could have lived abroad in Guam and studied the Chamorro indigenous culture, and despite societal pressures, didn't have to stop collecting napkins. I wasn't sure if you ever felt that way when you looked at the dried vomit in the If like me you sit and wonder whatever in the world it was about the other things you always wanted to do and be that scared you so much you ran away and did the other thing, the safer thing, the thing that brought you to where you are now.
One of the reasons I think the show works so well when I listened to it was you can, there, as Jay was saying, there is this undertone of sadness and emotional stuff, but you've done such a great job with the lyrics that you, on top of the music, you've got very meaningful lyrics, but also you don't forget that there's comedy there, so that there's some very clever lyrics that catch your ear. And the wordplay is very funny, and it's constantly shifting and keeping you on your toes, because out of nowhere, there will be suddenly something that makes you smile or just laugh. And that keeps you kind of moving along with the story. And it also, you have to remember, many, many people, including myself, I've worked in offices and I've worked with people like Peggy. So I totally related to her. I mean, I've known Peggy's. I have worked with Peggy's. I have worked with women who have been in that position for years and years and years, working for the same boss and literally being the office wife. Now, they may not have been in love with him. They may not have wanted to be married to him, but they have been dedicated and loyal. And they have sometimes known that person even better than the person's real wife in real life. And to see and have had no life. And sometimes they have been so highly functional at their job that it would not surprise me if they were talking to inanimate objects sometimes because they literally were so focused on being dedicated that they didn't have anything else. So you feel sorry for Peggy, but at the same time, you're still laughing out. You're still, I mean, you're kind of sad, but I got to tell you, during the perfect cup, when Velna keeps calling her by the wrong name and she keeps correcting her, I was cracking up every time she kept going, Peggy, Peggy. She kept trying to correct her. It's so funny because it's so clever the way the song is structured, the way the songs are structured, that you keep making sure to remind the audience that, hey, we know we're taking you down some dark paths here and we're discussing some very fantastical, weird things, but it is still funny and it's still outrageously weird and silly. So yeah, I mean,
also we get through the day too in terms of like these sad people. Like we have like episodes self-deprecating and
right,
we just have to like say these funny things to ourselves sometimes and laugh about the situations we're in, and that's what we kind of tried to do. And it's interesting that what those two moments that Drew spoke about, because exactly what Drew said, like they weren't actually moments where we said, hey, we should write a song here for Harry that is going to be let us tap into his emotions. It's not even a song. If you listen to it, actually, he just sings the words "this morning," which I happened to see that was like a theme or a phrase he repeated when he wrote the block of text, and with some underscore. I mean, there's a little bit, but it wasn't conceived as a song, and neither was I Coulda. I just took that block of text, and it doesn't rhyme. Maybe I adjusted one or two little things here and there, but for the most part, it was just like the monologue that Drew wrote that felt right. So I didn't feel the need to lyricize or musical theaterize a lot of things, which is why our collaboration is so exciting, because my goal is to like, sometimes you don't even know you're listening to a song, especially with "This Morning." You're just all of a sudden in this somber moment with Harry. And then we, you know, cut it off with, you know, tortilla chips or salsa.
A very disrespectful comment. He ends
disrespectful comment. So, like life is. So I think that's how we are kind of taking you on this journey and getting away with it, because sometimes you don't even realize you're now in the middle of a sequence that we put you in.
Mm-hmm. So talk about deciding to do the album at this point.
Well, we were lucky enough to have the Micro Musical Theater Show, which has produced a series of audio musicals specifically. Alton Christensen did pre-pandemic, and he came to hear a concert version that Anne did of the new Peggy at Green Room 42, and decided that it would make an excellent audio musical, which is something new he's been trying to bring to downloads. And so we recorded the entire score and book, and I sort of rearranged the book as an audio play. It didn't take much rearranging, but there are a few things that you have to mention. Rita has to refer to herself as a manila envelope, otherwise we don't know. So stuff like that. But for the most part, the book is unchanged. You can download that full recording with the book, I think, on Apple Podcasts under the Micro Musical Theater Show. It's available, so the score and the book is totally free to listen to. But we had these wonderful studio, you know, recorded songs, and I said I think we should release it as an album because it's that good. So we had them remastered. The cast was on board. It hasn't been that much time. It's just been, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years. And it's time to give the show a shot in the arm. And I think the only show that anyone really compares this to, at least to me, is Little Shop of Horrors, just in terms of the old school world, and it plays by its own rules. And there's this kind of a supernatural function, and objects are singing and speaking that normally wouldn't. And so that's been playing for so long that that gave me hope that maybe there's a place for this as well. So we're hoping, obviously, to get a premiere. We've done this in concert. We've done this in an album form. We've done this as an audio play. So, you know, we're really hoping. It's a 5-cast show. It's easy to do. And we're really hoping someone is interested in pursuing an offbeat alternative dark musical comedy with a female lead.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Little Shop, because that was sort of in the back of my mind also. I was sort of thinking this really could actually exist in the same world as Little Shop. It sort of reminded me a lot of that tone and that style. It's a little morbid, a little off center, but it's funny. And the score is really, really good. It's a great listen. I really recommend it.
Aged well, you know. I think Little Shop has aged well.
And
I'm hoping that this will too. We'll just accept that this is the time that it was in, and mm-hmm. you know, as in the way that we do with Little Shop. So
yeah, absolutely. So where can people find information about the show? Let's send them to the right website.
Sure. Well, we have a website for the actual show, which will detail the score. You can listen to the score completely for free, as well as we have a few of the songs sung by Mary Testa and Allison Fraser and Cirilla Bear. So we have a few demos, information about development history, and our agent to contact. It is thenewpeggy.com, which hopefully is not hard to remember.
No, I'll put a link. There'll be a link on the radio page so people can find you.
Great.
Click on the link right below where this radio show is listed, and they can go right to thenewpeggy.com and find you guys.
Excellent.
So I'm so glad you guys took the time today to chat with us about The New Peggy. It's been a wonderful experience. And I, like I said, one of the most unusual cast recordings I have heard this year. A lot of fun. Intriguing. Because as I listened to it, I was like, I really need to get my hands on the script. I need to find out what's going on. Because as I'm listening to it, I'm going, wait, especially at the beginning, I was like, now, Eugene is a stapler? Did I hear that right? Eugene is a stapler. Okay. And I'm listening to it. I'm going, okay, this is odd. Oh, wait, now, who is Velma? And I'm listening and I'm going, this is really interesting. And the music takes you on the journey, which is great. Because a lot of times you listen to these scores and you're not really, it's really hard to get a feel for the world it's taking you into. And this really takes you into a separate world. It's a whole different world you're jumping into with characters that are of that world. And Peggy is a whole different world you're exploring. That's for sure. And thank
you. Well, I'd be happy to get you the script.
It's
just as offbeat as the music, and perhaps a little more shocking. So
and thank goodness for Anne Harada, because she
yes.
One of the things I, you know, and I also noted, and I wasn't sure if I was just hearing things, but or maybe it was just mentally me. But as I listened to, and I always tell people, when you sit down to listen to any cast recording or literally any recording, but especially a cast recording, take the time to listen to it from beginning to end in one whole sitting, because it's taking you on a journey. It's telling a story, mm-hmm. and you need to listen to it all through in one sitting. And I have done that twice in a row with this album. But was it my imagination, or is there a change in Anne's vocal style once we get to The New Peggy? Because she's singing almost in her kind of squeaky little girlish voice through a lot of the first part of the show. And then when we get to The New Peggy and she really starts to sing a little bit more full out, she's sounding a lot more mature woman sounding. I don't know whether that was intentional or if that's just the way the score is written, but I was like, oh my God, she sounds like she's like, new. It's like she's found a new voice when she gets to that song.
Naturally, kind of.
It just happened naturally because I heard it. I was like, maybe I'm hearing things, but she's sounding much more full voiced when she starts to sing in The New Peggy when she gets the title song. But maybe I just heard things. Anyway.
No, I don't think I think that was very much on purpose. And in the way that you mentioned Shad like earlier, I don't think that is a bad thing, a bad characteristic for this role. A woman like this would be childlike. She's never really grown up. So up until that point where she misguidedly discovers a new version of herself and is newly misguidedly empowered through a murderous act, shall we say, she does transform. But I think she does return back to that little girl at the end. and right. the finale.
Well, I will avidly devour the script once I get my hands on it. I can fill in all the little mental blanks that I was trying to fill in my head as I was listening to the score. Anyway,
well, maybe have a drink before because it's a wild ride.
Okay. Well, there you go. Drew and Jay, it was a pleasure chatting with you.
You too. Continued
success with the new Peggy. I encourage everyone to give it a listen and visit the website and check it out.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.